Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week for your listening pleasure. No guests today, so we're going to pop the caller lines open for those of you who are willing to ring in and tell us your views. Of course, if it's only one caller calling in, we won't take the call, but, you know, just more than enough would be great. All right, so the number is 218-339-8525. That's 218-339-8525. Now, we want to go and address a little bit of the old political issues in it tonight, and There's a whole bunch of stuff going on in New Zealand with politics, so I've got a few articles here from the New Zealand Herald to read out. And I was just wondering, you know, am I just covering things that the mainstream media are covering just to try and click whore and so on and so forth? The answer is obviously yes. All right, so our very first article that we have here today, Michael Cox. I love that when political commentators are for the mainstream media are named ironically like that. Yearning for yesteryear's policies is a mistake. Does this person realize that yesteryear's policies is the only thing we've had since like the late 70s? Sell off the country to foreign banks. That's the yesteryear interests. I mean, am I wrong here? Have I gotten this? Have I gotten some wires crossed? I don't think so. Brian Gould's oft-printed politically contentious views are a product of his past. Who is Brian Gould? I guess we'll find out. He obviously finds the policies practiced by John Key and Bill English hard to take and suggests that he could follow the interventionist Keynesian economics of yesteryear. He even implies that budget surpluses are somehow evil. Well, of course they're somehow evil, because it means that you'd actually get on top of paying off your debt to the bankers that own your entire frickin' economy. Brian and I go a long way. We'll go back a long way. Yeah, almost backwards as far as, you know, sacrificing children in order to, I don't know, perhaps get a higher crop yield. I met him briefly when, as a Rhodes Scholar, here we go. Anyway, know who Cecil Rhodes is? The Rhodes Scholarship, you know, one of the richest men that the British Empire ever produced. Named a country after himself called Rhodesia, later became Zimbabwe, and they kicked all the white farmers out. He set up seven wills to advance the British Empire through making a secret society. And only one of those wills has ever been made public. The Rhodes Scholarship, where they recruit the best and the brightest to put into the leadership positions so that they'll all be fully indoctrinated in his kind of thinking, so that the British Empire, aka the New World Order, will be the only thing that exists. You know? That's what's happening here. And you know, they just come out and admit it, but they don't. I don't think there's anything bad about it. I think it's good, you know, implementing draconian New World Order. I don't give a frack about the people or their health or their future or sovereignty or anything that actually defined the country at all. I'm a Rhodes Scholar, you know. I've got scholastic ability. He was studying law at Oxford University. He said he was a gownie and I was a, quote, townie. My home was in a village just outside Oxford, and I was home on leave from my position as a ship's mate, having just visited New Zealand. There's a Kiwi over by the bar, pointed out an old school friend. His name is Brian Gould. He and I shared a couple of half pints of local warm beer at the Turf, a pub tucked in just behind New College. He was obviously very bright and enjoying the university life. Yes, especially all the copious quantities of cocaine he was sticking up his nostril. That's just an allegation. I'm just kidding. But he probably did even worse. Since then, I have followed his career with interest. Here was a young lad from Waipa doing well in London, first as a diplomat and then as an MP for the British Labour Party. What was I talking about? The Rhodes Scholarship and advancing the aims of the British Empire, and then he's an MP for the British Labour Party. Brian was in and out of British parliamentary seats, finishing up as MP for Dagenham in 1983. In 92, he stood for the leadership of his Labour Party following the resignation of Neil Kinnock. Even for the British Labour Party, Brian was considered pretty left-wing and failed in his leadership bids. Oh, and just like every other really crazy draconian socialist kind of policy or whatever, they're all probably members of the Fabian Society. What's the symbol of the Fabian Society again? Isn't it a wolf in sheep's clothing? You know? Does anybody else realise that there is a socialist conspiracy to take over the world or a socialist agenda? Because it's not a conspiracy, because conspiracies are kept secret. The socialist agenda is actually very prominent and widely talked about and admitted, and it's undeniable, and almost every single policy that a socialist could frickin' dream of is being passed as we speak. Okay? They're destroying business by putting up red tape everywhere. They're destroying people's ability to be independent by getting them all on welfare and so on and so forth. We are starting to live in a socialist dream. There ain't going to be no freedom, ain't going to be no liberty, ain't going to be no personal responsibility. Okay? Everything will be taken care of for you by the daddy state. Incidentally, what's communism famous for? It's the most efficient killing machine in all history, responsible for more deaths in peacetime than any other factor. factor killed more people during peacetime than died in all wars of the 20th century combined. This is a great socialist utopia we're talking about here. Which the Rhodes Scholarship all love, you know, because, hey, you know what socialism does? Takes away everybody's rights, confiscates everybody's wealth, and just gives it to the elite. Not entirely dissimilar from what the National Party or any other kind of party in every single fucking country in this world is doing. It's because it's all part of the socialist agenda, okay? They've made the Democrats in the United States go from, you know, possibly being maybe a little bit left of the center to way, way down the end there. And they've made the alleged right-wingers, who're supposed to be, you know, a little bit right of the center, just a little bit further left than anybody could ever conceive possible. So your choices are hardcore socialism or softcore socialism that will develop itself into hardcore socialism. So basically, it's hardcore socialism or bust. That's the only choices we've got in America. It's the same choice that we got here in New Zealand. And here we are. Here's a article in the New Zealand Herald saying, oh, you know, we don't want to repeat these failed policies of the past, acting like it's one party or one person or anything like that. They're all the same kettle of freaking fish. This is a tuna fish sandwich with improper mayonnaise. These people are not making something worth swallowing. It is only worth regurgitating. Because you don't want to ingest the poison. Bryan resigned from British politics in 1994 to return to New Zealand to taking up the vice chancellor's job at Waikato University. He was the chancellor of vice. That's right. In a university. He lasted in that job for 10 years, and we met again as fellow trustees of the University Foundation. And have you noticed also how these Rhodes Scholars and all of these other icons of officialdom, and this is the other thing that really frustrates me out, appeal to officialdom, appeal to authority. Look, just because somebody's got some kind of position, some kind of title, some kind of a suit and tie, you know, with a collar around their neck or cuffs around their wrist or whatever the frack, doesn't mean that they're an authority on all things that are of that particular persuasion. If anything, it probably means that they know very little about it and are probably just going to try and brainwash the living frack out of you so that you believe what BS they're shoveling so that you live your life as a slave. Fundraising for and building the splendid performance arts center, and I wanted to see him go from the vice chancellor's role. He did a good job on the foundation. Now he is writing these hard-hitting columns, and hopefully readers can now understand a little of what drives him to his Fabian and Keynesian views. Remember how I mentioned Fabian socialism? Remember how I talked about the wolf in sheep's clothing? And boom, there it is. This guy's a new world order plant. Okay, this Bryan Gould dude. Okay, I hate to use guilt by association, but if you're part of an association that's very guilty, I think that implies that there is a little bit of guilt by association. You know what I'm saying? Even if they move to me. How can it be any more obvious? I mean, you know, when you look at the US administration, you see Trilateral Commission, Bilderberg Group, et cetera, bankers, Zionists, yada, yada. Okay. It's the same MO. And I can guarantee you, this is my assumption. Every freaking party in every freaking Western nation is stacked to the gills with people of that persuasion. You know, whether they be Fabians, whether they be Bilderbergers, Trilateral Commission, Council on Foreign Relations, and there's equivalents all the year round. I can guarantee you, without even looking at it, just by the assumption, just by looking at the policies that these parties implement, that they're all a part of the same scamming artist group called the New World Order. They are puppets. They are here to deceive and to lead us into a dark future. A future so dark that one might not even scarcely believe that it's real life. It'll look like a cartoon. Like a really dark futuristic manga cartoon. Oh yeah. Like something real bad. Oh my God. Oh my God. It'd be so bad, man. We won't even be able to We won't even be able to fathom it. You're going to kill everybody, you know? I mean, this is what I don't get about people and why they can still discuss politics without throwing up in their mouth a little. These people are playing part in the scheme to kill you. All of you. To sterilize you. To toxify you. And they still feel like playing politics? You still think like voting's enough, like once in every frickin' 3 or 4 or 5, whatever, however many years that your scumbaggery leader decides to vote for another dictator who will also ignore you and ruthlessly implement the agenda of the New World Order? They still want to play politics over this? You know? As if people got a memory. It lasts about 2 minutes. You know, I'm in politics, screwed a few people over. Okay, sweet ass, not a problem. Wait, hold on a second. But he screwed people over while he was in politics. Yeah, I know, but I forgot about that. So I'm just going to vote for him again. Are you retarded? No, I'm not retarded. I'm just voting for a person who I despise, who I know is going to rape and destroy my country. Okay? What's wrong with that? Everything? Yeah, but bro, you know, what other choice have we got? How about actually resisting? How about getting off your ass and doing something to save your country from a ruthless criminal sociopathic scumbagger? Maybe that might be an idea worthy of merit, you know? Perhaps not selling out every single man, woman, and child in your country to a criminal scum that want to get you into debt and gradually exterminate you in like a FEMA camp or something. Maybe that's the way to go. As opposed to voting for the very people who are trying to kill you. I would imagine Brian would have found Tony Blair's new Labour views pretty hard to swallow as well. Yeah, probably because they weren't radical enough to destroy the UK with immigration to the point where now it's like 6 out of 10 children or something like that in London schools have English as a second language. Okay, they're trying, and it's not like, oh, I'm racist. It's when you destroy somebody's culture, the easiest way to do it is bring people of a different culture into that to blend it until eventually you won't realize what your culture is anymore, and then you won't defend it when somebody tries to take it over. Okay, if you destroy national pride, national identity, it's very easy to take over a country, and they're just using people of a different race and a different creed or whatever that really have nothing to do with the agenda other than the fact that they don't want to live in a country that doesn't have any freedom, and so they move into our countries, and then our countries react, and people do get racist, and people do get angry, and they wind up doing a whole bunch of nasty stuff, and then they get taken all their freedoms and liberties taken off them anyway. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com.
I stand alone against your mad, deadly, worldwide, conspiratorial, gangster, computer god communism with wall-to-wall, deadly gangster protection, lifelong sworn conspirators, murder incorporated,
welcome back,
crime, the police and judges, the deadly sneak parroting puppets, gangsters, using all the...
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. 5 days a week, 5 till 7 Central, 6 till 8 Eastern, 11 till 1 GMT, that's in the middle of the night. And in New Zealand, I think it's around about 10 till midday. And as soon as we move into summery time, when we get daylight savings back, it'll be pushed back to like 11 till 1. And then it'll be pushed back again when the United States goes into daylight savings time, back to midday through 2 p.m. For the summer schedule, 5 days a week. Now, in New Zealand, 5 days a week means Tuesday through Saturday because it's the American Monday through Friday because we broadcast live from the future. Indeed. Now, coming back to this, the old Keynesian, John Maynard Keynes. Now, wait, wasn't he like the lead singer at all? Oh, no, that was Maynard James Keating or maybe it was Ronan Keating. John Maynard Keynes' economic philosophy was also the guiding star of one of our homegrown former ministers of finance and prime minister, Robert David Mulvey. Old Rob Muldoon. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Rob Muldoon's a classic. A classic. I sat alongside him in the National Party caucus room as he bludgeoned our fragile economy in a debilitating Keynesian way. A debilitating Keynesian way, oh yeah. He controlled prices, wages, interest rates, and dividends, and did nothing to stop the spend and pray mentality of the 1970s. It was a dismal failure, and the electorate sacked us as government for it. It took Roger Douglas's ministers of finance to straighten up our small economy, straighten it up by selling it all out to foreign interests and then giving the control of it to the Reserve Bank governor who chucked the interest rates up so high that it made like about 10% of the country unemployed. And the rest of them lost all of their wealth because they couldn't pay their loans and stuff anymore. Okay, that's what they call shoring up and fixing the economy. Out to the frickin' New World Order. For a payoff of like what? Allegedly, Roger Douglas took a payoff from all these world bankers, right? Of like 25 grand or something pitifully small in order to sell the entire nation out to evil scumbaggery agents of the New World Order. You know? This country's a cheap place to bribe in, mate, if you know the right people. Mm-hmm. As the shadow finance spokesman of the national opposition at this time, I could only watch in awe as Roger did all the right things, introduced all the economic policies one would expect from a Tory regime. It was the worst job I ever had. Over many years in politics, I've discovered that the average Kiwi doesn't want to be controlled. We understand the role of government well and react when politicians overstep the mark. What country is this guy living in? Kiwis love being controlled. They love being slaves. They never freaking resist one freaking iota. They say that they don't like it, but they just put up with it as if they don't give a frack. Yeah. Yeah. I'm starting to really, really get angry with my countrymen these days, bae. Mm-hmm. We freaking derelict in your duties. Duty to the nation. I don't give a frack whether you think you're a citizen or a good parent or a good business person or whatever. You all contribute to the economy somehow. But at the end of the day, when scumbaggery agents of the New World Order come in and take over this country, you don't do Shiite Muslim about it, do you? Other than complain like a bunch of sheep going, oh, we don't want to go into the slaughterhouse. Slaughterhouses are bad. But you still walk in. And you still get your throat cut, and you still get hung out to drip dry. Don't you, New Zealand? You bunch of cowardly scum. You know what? That's a really insulting thing to say to my countrymen, but gosh dang it, if you are one of those cowardly people who would listen to the resistance, watch it happening, and never in any way, shape, or form contribute, then what the hell is the point? All right? What the hell is the point? I mean, come on. Take the bull by the horns. He's charging at you. We're all going to die. Okay? I can't make it clearer than that. You either do something about this and do something effective. You know, protesting doesn't do really enough. You know, my job's just to make sure that people actually hear what the hell is going on. Okay? And if you don't do anything, we're all going to die. All right, I'm very serious when I say I may be saying it with a wee bit of a grin on my face, you know, a wee bit of a smirk, but I actually believe this. I do believe that ruthless, criminal, socialist, Fabian, New World Order, banking scum, when they take over a country, wind up killing any of the people who don't think the way that they do so that they can more easily enslave the rest. You're one of those people, okay? Even if you ain't doing anything, you're still thinking that you don't like it, and you're going to be targeted for extermination sooner or later as soon as they've got enough power to get away with it. Hell, they've probably got enough power to get away with it now, but I don't think it's quite necessary because nobody's actually resisting or doing anything, are they? There's a couple of people, and guess what? Guess who the big resistors to the big massive socialism and takeover of this country are? You guessed it. The frickin' socialists! you go to any protest, and it's just loaded and led with all of these socialists. What are they arguing about? He was like, oh, we don't like tyranny. We don't like government control over the economy. We don't like private corporate interests.
Then why are you advancing socialism? It's giving you the very thing that you want. Why are you protesting it? You should be in Parliament going, yep, 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 and just sitting away and just agreeing with the whole frickin' agenda, because you don't actually really want to resist what's going on, do you? You claim, oh, privacy's a really important thing, and you get out there, protest against the GCSB or whatever. It's socialist policy that's bringing in the GCSB frickin' bill, okay, to control and surveil and make sure nobody got any freedom or frickin' liberty so that they can't resist the elite, who are the biggest socialists of them all, who want to socialize all the problems and privatize all the money and all the resources into their hands so that all of us will be slaves on the socialist global plantation called the New World Order. Okay? That's the plan. If you think I'm crazy for saying it, go ahead. Call me crazy. Call me nuts. Call me any other thing under the sun. You can call me homophobic. You can call me racist. You can call me X number of names. But I'll tell you what. I'm not going to stop saying what I think. You know why? Because if I stop saying what I think, because I'm afraid that people will call me names that have no relevance as a result, I won't need a slave master to tell me what to say or what to think anymore. I'll do it to myself, just like all of you people are doing. All right, you are preventing yourself from saying what you think because you're afraid of being called names that are irrelevant. That is a freaking tragedy. Now, over the many years in politics, I've discovered that the average Kiwi doesn't want to be controlled. I love that line. The average Kiwi is actually true. You know, you don't want to be controlled, do you? You just kind of let it happen, you know, sort of like kids don't want to go to school, but they still go to school. You know, the reason why kids don't want to go to school is because the education sucks and they get bullied all the time. And you basically walk away with a piece of paper that says, hey, you know how to take orders mindlessly and learn stuff that doesn't freaking matter and will never be of use to you in your entire life. Congratulations. Here's a job that you're not qualified enough for because you don't have any experience, because instead of actually giving you experience during schoolwork or anything of that nature or anything like a work ethic trying to instill that into you, you only know how to blindly regurgitate BS. Okay, that's good. That's nice. That's the education's achievement system. It's made a perfect little repetition-loving slave, hasn't it? Mm-hmm. And then you get a couple more years of it in university and even a couple more years of it in your postgraduate study and then a couple more years as your PhD, which means it's pretty hard to determine anything. That's what a PhD means, pretty hard to determine anything. I like that. Do you like that? We understand the role of government well and react when politicians overstep the mark. I mean, come on. This guy's totally out of touch with reality, isn't he? Polls show that most are reasonably happy with the way we are recovering from the economic downturn. They like Key's style. Recovering from the economic downturn with 3,000 people lining up in South Auckland to get a frickin' supermarket checkout job? With women that have sent out over 1,000 job applications to be a secretary and getting rejected, with some businesses getting as many as 3,000 applications for a single job opening? And they think we're recovering from the downturn in the economy? John Key has destroyed this economy quite well. We've gotten us into more debt than anybody else has ever conceived of. You know, got a $50 billion debt ceiling. $50 billion with a country of 4 million people. What the hell is that? What's that, like 5, 10 million a pop? or something ridiculous. Like everybody in this country owes like what? Close to $1 million? I wonder what the math is on that. It'd be interesting to find out anyway. Over many years in politics, I've discovered that the average Kiwi doesn't want to be controlled. I just don't get this. How could you spend years in politics and determine that people don't want to be controlled? You've been controlling us the whole freaking time, and suddenly you realize that we don't like you anymore? Now, Brian Gould, anyway,
And I find it interesting how his name's Gould, you know? Like he's out of a Michael Jackson thriller video or something. I'm Doc Gould. He advocates that we go back to these heady days of Keynes. His British Labour Party mates didn't like his advocacy, and I'm picking the majority of New Zealanders wouldn't want to go back to the ways of Muldoon. It's a dead economic duck. I'll tell you what, Michael Cox, former National MP. See, this is a Cox criticising a Gould. Those are the choices that we've got here in New Zealand politics. In a nutshell, you've got a choice between a Cox or a Gould. come on. Yeah, I'm not making it up. I'm not making it up. Those are the real names. I mean, come on, bro. Come on, bro. Now, speaking of socialists who are incidentally resisting the New World Order, we got Jane Kelsey. Good old Professor Jane Kelsey. I'm going to see if I can get the thing up on the screen behind me. Yeah, there we are. There we are. Professor Jane Kelsey. Trade talks failing to deliver on deadline. Now, anybody know how the European Union got set up? You know, it was like under Economic Prosperity Partnership or something of that nature. The European Economic Community. What they do is they try to entice you and they get you in with trade deals. And what these trade deals really do is they actually lock you into international governance so that your country doesn't actually have any sovereignty anymore, nor does your business have any protection really of any kind. And they have to compete against global giants that are all controlled by the New World Order, which is not a fair fight, and they can't compete. And so they wind up getting either bought out, sold out, or destroyed entirely. Okay, that's what trade deals do. I hate to put it to you that bluntly, but if you're signing onto a trade deal, it means all local innovative business eventually will be undermined and destroyed and taken over by the New World Order bankers and their associated businesses, Monsanto, so on and so forth. You know the kind of corporate scum that I'm talking about. Like even McDonald's, Jamie Oliver proved it. In court not too long ago, actually, maybe it might be in a couple of months or whatever, won in court that McDonald's is not fit for human consumption. It's not fit for human consumption? Are you saying that they feed like close to 1 billion people a year or something like that and it ain't fit for human consumption? Oh, well, no wonder we've got an obesity epidemic. No wonder we've got a hypertension epidemic. No wonder we've got X amounts of frickin' epidemics, not least of all cancer, which now affects like between 1 in 3 and 1 in 2 people like virtually worldwide. Okay? No wonder. This is what trade deals lock into. You know, because if you come out and you say, hey, McDonald's food ain't fit for human consumption, then McDonald's can sue your country in the world court, which is a corporate court, which they in no small part own. And your country has to pay them fines for messing with their business practice. You know, you're criminals. You're trying to kill us with soft-kill bioweapons locked in 2 beef patties and all special sauce and on a sesame seed bun bioweapon. And you're like, nah. Well... That's messing with our mojo, mate. We don't like that. So what we're going to do is completely destroy your country and give you a massive fine with these courts that we own and control. How about them apples? And you go, oh, well, I really don't like that. And you go, well, I don't give a frack if you like it or not, bro. You signed up to it. Okay. We're going to destroy you. I mean, think about things before you sign them, ladies and gentlemen. What are you? You want to be an easily controlled slave? You know, economically speaking, you want companies to be able to get away with anything they want, and your nation never be able to do anything about it. Okay, sign up to trade deals. Go for your life. You know, what do you got to lose? Sovereignty, prosperity, freedom. You know, all of these kind of things. And then, of course, later on, just like they did with the European Union, they'll just destroy your economy, they'll just collapse your currency, and they'll just turn it into a dog and pony show, election-style process, where nobody gets any freedom, no matter which Herman von Rompuy they elect. It doesn't matter, all right? Nobody knows any of the people who are in control of the whole scheme anyway. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com.
On December 16th, 1961, the world turned upside down, then inside out, and I was born screaming in America.
It was the tail end of the American dream. Just before we lost our innocence, irrevocably, when the TV eye brought the horror of our lives into our homes for all to see. I was told when I grew up I could be anything I wanted. A fireman, a policeman, a doctor, even president it seemed. And for the first time in the history of mankind, something new called an astronaut. But like many kids growing up on a steady diet of Westerns, I always wanted to be the cowboy hero. That lone voice in the wilderness, fighting corruption and evil wherever I found it, and standing for freedom, truth, and justice. And in my heart of hearts, I still track the remnants of that dream wherever I go, in my never-ending ride into the setting sun.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week for your listening pleasure. And I must recommend that you listen to the show 5 days a week, all right? Particularly when you're listening to things that you don't agree with or whatever, okay? Because if you're only listening to what you've already at this point familiar with or already listened to and already agree with, you know, that kind of thing, I mean, you're wasting your freaking life. You'll never learn a damn thing at all. And the show always talking about different topics. We've always got different guests, you know? We're always flying way off the handle, going out left field, you know? We'll hit you with things that you didn't even know freaking exist. It okay, and I can guarantee you start listening to the show 5 days a week, you will geometrically increase the amount of knowledge that you have. Everybody goes to work, then comes home, and then thinks that the work is over. No, actually, if you've got a slave job, your work becomes learning when you're not at your slave job, okay? And even when you're at your slave job, you've got to do a bit of learning as well. Otherwise, you won't be able to do your job very well. Speaking of doing jobs pretty well, the good old Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement. Let's roll through this article here. Jane Kelsey, trade talks failing to deliver on deadline. Question, when is the end game of a negotiation no longer the end game? Answer, when the political forces driving it decide to cut their losses sooner rather than later to minimize the potential loss of face. In this case, the faces being saved are the political leaders of the 12 countries currently negotiating the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, TPPA. Last November, they set a target for concluding the deal by the end of 2013, more than 3 years after they began. The leaders are due to meet again in Bali, Indonesia, in early October on the sidelines of the APEC meeting. APEC is a meeting of chickens, by the way. Missed deadlines risk becoming a habit. They also discredit the hype that the TPPA will deliver gold standard 21st century rules that the other APEC countries, including China, will aspire to sign on to. Yeah. The US, which is driving the project, has a dilemma. Obama needs a deal. He has yet to successfully negotiate a single free trade agreement. His trade office is under sequester and has no budget to continue expensive TPPA negotiations, let alone the new talks on a parallel deal with the European Union. Do you see what I'm talking about? The New World Order agenda, tie the Asian Pacific Union up together in trade deals, then turn us into a place where the decision making can be made centrally, and then you link us up through as other plates in the New World Order system via continental kind of dictatorships. You know, European Union dictates those in Europe, American Union dictates those in America, and then you got the Pacific Union will dictate all of us, and so on and so forth. It'll be union, but these unions don't bring anybody together. They just, unless, of course, it's together in a FEMA camp, of course. Obama also needs the Congress to grant him, quote, fast-track negotiating authority, without which it can pick apart any final agreement that means satisfying multiple conflicting lobbies. Fast track cannot happen before the end of 2013, if at all, but other countries will be wary of signing anything without it. Now, I have this great difficulty, of course, when you're reading out articles like this, not to just sort of go off on a rant, you know, because sometimes you'll just mention things that they mention later on in the article. You know how sometimes you ask in a movie, why is that person standing there? Why do they have that particular kind of cigarette? Wasn't that the last cigarette that the other bad guy was looking at? You just watch the movie. It'll all pan out, I can assure you. Other champions of the TPPA also have a dilemma. New Zealand's Tim Grosser, and remember how I found our names are quite funny, you know? One of the guys that's negotiating our Trans-Pacific Partnership for us, his last name is Grosser, you know? And I couldn't think of anybody Grosser to do it. Will fear for his grand plan that can morph into an Asia-wide free trade deal. He has said no deal is better than a low-quality deal, but no deal may be the result. Deal or no deal, you know? What's behind briefcase number 600? Oh, it's tyranny and scumbaggery and extermination of the vast majority of the population who don't agree with being slaves. Oh, okay. What's in that case over there? I don't know. Could be $200,000. Pushing too hard could be some countries walk away. Chile's former chief negotiator wrote a media column warning the TPPA is a high risk for developing countries. Well, no Shiite Muslim. No Shiite Sherlock. What do you expect? You know, here's what it does. It restricts third world countries so that they stay third world countries and restricts first world countries so that they become third world countries. So that way, everywhere's a third world country, apart from, you know, little hot spots and so on and so forth, where they can have their smart growth cells where everybody's living in a freaking slave block with a camera in every room. And no private transport, just public transport, you know, facial recognition cameras on every street corner and stuff like that. And if you start doing anything or resisting the New World Order and don't want to be a freaking slave in a slave block cell in your little apartment next to train tracks or whatever, we'll just turn your chip off. You can't even buy food. All right, that's basically the end of the story here. All right, everything that I see being implemented in every single country basically ties into this one agenda, the global socialist New World Order Agenda 21 agenda. That's, you know, it's out in the open. And what really frustrates me is that the people who are in, you know, these resistance positions just ain't freaking talking about them. You know, they just, it's like, here I am, Jane Kelsey. I'm trying to expose a massive, nasty agenda, but I'm not going to call it New World Order. I'm not going to call it globalism. I'm not going to call it global socialism. I'm not going to call it tyrannical or anything like that. I'm just going to call it a trade deal and say that it's not fair, okay? And act like it's happening in frickin' isolation because I want this one particular thing to be knocked out of the way. Don't you get it, Jane? They're just going to, like, if this thing doesn't work, they'll just do another thing that does. Until the entire agenda is exposed, no single part of the agenda can really be pushed back, in my opinion. But, you know, I applaud your efforts and what have you for exposing this one particular agenda, probably better than anybody else had, admittedly. But if you keep ignoring the global agenda, it's going to keep continuing, and it won't matter how well you are, how good you are at resisting a singular agenda, there'll be 20 other agendas, you know, coming through. Like, you ever played dodgeball when people are like throwing 20 different balls at you and you catch one of them and you go, ha 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 ha, I caught one of them, as you get hit with 19 other balls? That's what we're doing. All right. The Malaysians are under a huge domestic pressure and are conducting public cost benefit analyses. You know, wow, look, something that they never did for the super city or any other New Zealand policy that they've implemented for the past like 30 or 40 years. A cost-benefit analysis, eh? Who would have thunk it? What a revolutionary thought. They have clear bottom lines and have rejected any firm deadlines. Okay, here's our bottom line. Frack off, TPPA. Frack off. This week's 19th round in Brunei is the first for Japan. The US Congress is demanding Japan makes undeliverable concessions, including accepting rules that target alleged currency manipulation. Well, I wonder if John Key should be targeted there, considering he's a currency manipulator. Or he's just a current manipulator, whatever. I forget the difference. These tensions are producing a classic doublespeak that reiterates the goal for 2013 while anticipating the failure to deliver. 2 weeks ago, the U.S. Trade Representative, their trade minister, declared the negotiations were in their, quote, end game stage. You know, end game. I don't know. Whenever I hear the words end game, I don't think of a nice, fluffy agenda that's really nice for everybody and is going to help everybody. I think about, like, evil, I'm going to kind of, you know, enslave you very slowly like a frog in a boiling pot and then exterminate you kind of agenda. That's what comes to mind when I think about somebody's end game. You know, what's their end game? What are they doing to the... And they come out and they openly say, that, oh, it's the end game, you know. On Thursday and Friday last week, the TPPA ministers, including Grocer, met in Brunei. So as a Grocer Brunei, a Grocer Brown, their four-paragraph statement talked of, quote, entering the final stage.
Entering the final stage, you know.
I mean, can I do that in a Skeletor voice?
We are entering the final stage. And possible landing zones on sensitive and challenging issues, because the people are very scared about the fact that we're going to kill and enslave them, He-Man. Well, we're just going to have to BS them just a little bit, you know, Blues Brothers style. I know they had hope and everything, and we wanted to keep that hope alive. So I took the liberty of BSing you. Lights, oh no, that's a lie, it's just BS.
If the Australian minister was not there, he's probably out there, capital of Victoria, but getting bitter while he sells out Victoria. One of the government is in caretaker mode pending the election. Chile and Peru's representatives are apparently not allowed to attend much of the ministerial meeting, and the minister's media conference lasted barely 20 minutes. You know, it's just... it just reminds me of how bills get passed in Parliament. You know, controversial bill... Nobody wants it. And coincidentally, there's only like three or four people in the room doing all the negotiations and all the voting yay or nay or whatever. And basically, like, full on. The king is back. The king is back. And he'll tell us exactly what we want, exactly how we're going to do it. And nobody gets to say Shiite Muslim about it. All right? That's your future. You're a slave. Get used to it. Either that, start resisting it. We'll be right back with hour number two any minute now. Welcome back. Welcome back to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously Fukushima irradiated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, where everybody has a part-time job as an energy saver light bulb. Okay, back on this article talking about the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement. We're taking callers now, by the way. So the number is 218-339-8525. That's 218-339-8525. Keep them coming fast and furious. Call in as soon as you possibly can, if you please. The Obama administration has said, has since said it won't sacrifice quality for the deadline. Okay, so... Well, let me just see if I've got the political rhetoric down here. Okay, we've got a plan that has no quality, is complete BS, and enslaves mankind. And we have a deadline, and we don't really care whether or not we actually achieve any of our goals, so long as we keep to the deadline. Okay, so it's like if I was a magazine editor, for example, and I said you've got a deadline. And I don't care what you throw in at the deadline, as long as it's on deadline. It could be the worst written piece of crap that has ever existed on the face of the planet Earth. No good for the magazine. It could be good enough to wipe your bum with in the men's room. Okay? But as long as it's in on deadline, it's all good. Thank you, Obama administration. You're the Shiite Muslim. One is intellectual property, which... Yes. Go from wiping somebody's bum to talk about intellectual property, which is not entirely dissimilar for the Obama administration, which covers both internet copyright and pharmaceuticals.
Oh no. What's going on here?
Listen, yeah. The US has still not labeled text on biologics, which involves lucrative but ethically and culturally controversial patents connected with living organisms such as cloning. So, cloning is part of the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement. is anybody else kind of like just going, whoa, 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 right about now? Hmm? They're trying to protect patents and this kind of thing, and then it's like, yeah, clones, GMOs, and all that kind of thing. That's part of it. I think you can, Monsanto can sue you if your corn crop has 1% GMO corn, 1%, and they can take your farm because their crap blew on the wind, took root in your farm where you didn't want it, specifically grew other kinds of corn, and it got cross-pollinated, and then you lose your entire farm because they grew their stuff upwind from you. Oh, that's kind of, you know, the sort of game tune that I see coming out of these trade deals sort of thing. You're a slave. We're going to take everything you got, particularly the poor American family farmer who are, you know, going down pretty significantly recently. You know, due to Monsanto and the U.S. Corps of Army Engineers blowing up massive dams and flooding huge quantities of family farms that have been in family bloodlines for generations and so on and so forth. And then the government comes up and says, oh, we're going to buy all this land. Nice. Yeah. And nobody's going to repopulate it. It's all Agenda 21. You know, let all of the farmland and everything where everybody's living right now just go back to nature. Just let it back to nature. You know, doesn't matter whether or not they pass laws and say Australia to stop people collecting firewood because they want everything to go back to nature. And then they have these record forest fires because nobody collected the firewood and nobody was doing proper burn-offs as they should have been doing to prevent massive forest fires, which destroy whole towns. Okay? And then nobody comes back to those towns. They go back into the cities, into the smart growth cells, just like Agenda 21 prophesied. Hey. The chapter on state-owned enterprises has sat largely untouched while the U.S. tabled it over a year ago. Most countries, including New Zealand, fear it could impede the important public roles of state entities from Kiwibank and the part privatised state-operated enterprises, or SOEs, to health authorities and universities. Australia is trying to help the US out by contributing alternative text, but only 4 days of talks are scheduled for the chapter in Brunei. So, let me see if I got this straight. If you're passing a law, something to do with like state assets in New Zealand or whatever, they'll talk about it for a couple of years, right? And then maybe pass a piece of legislation that's draconian and sucks. These people, on the other hand, 4 days negotiation, and then they've set up an entire good portion of the nation's most economically contributing countries and geopolitically positioned countries, mind you. And they decide on that in 4 days of negotiation and pass it without the approval of any of the constituents or any of the people in any of the countries. And in fact, it's not even the prime ministers or any of those people that are duly elected to positions which are massive enough to really make these kind of decisions. Not that I agree that executive power should be unchecked and override over the people anyway, but that's what's happening, isn't it? But those aren't the people that are even doing it. They're particular trade ministers, you know. People have just been sent over there kind of like as economic henchmen to a large degree. And now, you're fracked. Yeah. How much negotiation did we have? Oh, 4 days. 4 days and we're fracked? Are you kidding me? Oh, my God. Oh, my God. This is really bad, bro. This is really bad. I'm just kind of at a loss for words with this. You know, these negotiations, if you can even call them that, are kind of like the end of sovereignty as we know it. This is what needs to be addressed here. Okay, is it cool to have no sovereignty of any kind, no ability to determine what you want? No, but you would agree with it. Well, that's what you're getting. Too bad. And you can't negotiate your way out of it unless you spend 4 days doing it, of course. A third major conflict is what the environmental chapter covers and whether it is enforceable. Malaysia is reportedly tabling a complete exclusion for tobacco policies. Then the US is still refusing to table anything meaningful for New Zealand on dairy and Australian on sugar. This does not mean that people should not be concerned. Obama could put enormous pressure on other political leaders in Bali in October for reasons unconnected with the TPPA. Politicians could agree to a deal for the sake of a deal, irrespective of the consequences. Let's deal for the sake of dealing. It's not deal or no deal. It's deal or worse deal. Mm-hmm. The current round in Brunei from August 22 to 30 has been billed as the last formal negotiations. Only a handful of groups dealing with the 29 chapters in the agreement will be there. Apparently, others will meet secretly in different countries before APEC in October. Ominously, the pharmaceutical talks are scheduled for Washington. Good! I feel like I'm going to blow a rage gasket here. I mean, really, they're setting up the whole frickin' world's agenda, the entire layout of the economy, and they're all doing it in secret? And or if they ain't doing it in secret, they're doing it in public with bugger all of the people who are actually responsible for the decisions actually sitting there just talking about it, you know? Like, only a smidgen of those people involved are actually going to be involved, and the rest of it's all done secretly behind closed doors, and nobody has any freaking clue what the frick is going on, all right? Okay. I'm about to lose my cool here. The development spells the end of the, quote, stakeholder process. The only stakeholder we're going to be left in is a piece of stem cell-controlled meat. While it has been frustrating and largely cosmetic and has impacted on some negotiators, no formal process will make it even harder for outsiders to get any information or to meet with negotiators who are worried and want to talk to independent experts. The TPPA remains a high-stakes game that the US wants and needs to win, but we will now know even less about it from the end of this round than we do now. Okay. Thank you, Jane Kelsey, for your contributions. You are a massive star, and thank you very much. The problem is, of course, you're not talking about the New World Order, are you, Jane? You're not talking about the One World Government, are you, Jane? You're not talking about the Council on Foreign Relations that spearheads deals like this. You're not talking about all of the international items of significance that actually tie this in and make it part of the perfect agenda for global control using trade deals. You don't relay it to the European Union, how they no longer have any freedom anymore, how the European Parliament just basically sets the agenda for the entire country and how they set that up with trade deals in the first freaking place. You're not mentioning. Why? Because I don't know why. Maybe it's because you don't know about these things. Maybe it's because you choose to not mention them because it undermines socialism, of which you support wholeheartedly. Maybe you're simply self-censoring so that you can get some scraps off of the king's table so that you can be reported in mainstream media like the New Zealand Herald. You know, and it's basically like this. You're either ignorant or you're complicit in some way, shape, or form. You know, and I don't know about complicity here. Because when you're university educated, boy, oh boy, especially if you're a professor, a law professor, no less, I don't want to sit back and just go, oh, you're just too stupid to know. Because you must know. You must know something. And whether or not you're using a tactic so that you'll be accepted in the public eye as a commentator on these particular things, you know, I guess I can put up with that. You know, it's not exactly selling out if you just dumb it down just a little bit, if you just censor it just a little bit. Is it? Is it? What? Come on. I think people really got to get wise to the New World Order. And they ain't going to get wise to the New World Order if every single freaking commentator that's trying to resist it never mentions it. You never mention it, do you? All of you.
Am I the only person in this fracking country who has a radio show, who's in the media and so on and so forth, that talks about this stuff? Okay? Am I the only one? You know, I'm certainly not the only one saying it, but I'm certainly the only one with the radio show saying it. The only one, I mean, come on. I can't do this all on my own. I need other people to back me up here. Come on, this is not a one-man band. How do you think this show survives? It survives entirely on the contributions of listeners. And thank you very much, listeners. I love you very much. You're very nice to me. Ah, so good. So good to people. Okay. Now, steer clear of costly veg, budget shoppers told. Dig this. The missus was in the supermarket yesterday and she comes home. She says her capsicums were $7 each. $7 for a capsicum! Unbelievable! Un-freaking-believable! Now, I remember something Lindsay Williams told me. That the price for food will be so high that all the food shelves will be stocked. And they'll remain virtually untouched. Nobody will be able to afford what's on the shelves. $7 capsicum. They were 50 cents not too long ago. Shoppers trying to feed their families on limited budgets are being told to buy something else when seasonal variations push the price of fresh vegetables out of their limits. Out of their freaking comfort zone. The price of capsicums has soared past $7 each in some places, enough to feed a family of four, says the, quote, food truck chef Michael Van Dielsen, said the price was, quote, outrageous, outrageous. Capsicum prices yesterday varied between supermarkets, greengrocers and farmers markets nationwide from as low as $1.50 each at one farmer's market to a whopping $7.19 each at a Christchurch New World. New World's a supermarket, by the way. And I always wanted to, like, you know, creative vandalism. You know, I'm not encouraging this, but it's just a fantasy of mine, one that I'll probably never fulfill because it's illegal, and I don't like to do illegal things because I really fear being arrested. That happened once. That happened to me once or twice, and I really don't ever want to go get arrested again, ever, for any reason, no matter what. Okay, and New World Order, you know, just is the New World sign and just spray paint order on the end of it, you know, so New World Order Supermarket. I thought it'd be classic. Maybe we'll just do it digitally, you know, a little bit of photoshopping. I'll get my man Roy onto that stuff. It'll be freaking awesome. Most prices hovered between $3 and $4 each. Nutritionist Nadia Lim said she was not using any capsicums in her cooking at the moment. Who on earth would buy one? That's nuts. You know, there's plenty of food out there, right? And naturally, you've got to start growing stuff yourself, yo. Don't have much of a choice these days, eh? And by the way, my missus Sarah, you can contact her through me if you want. Is helping to set up people's gardens, organic gardens, getting gardens established for people. Organic gardening services is what she got there. So if you go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com, click on the contact page or just Google Vinny Eastwood contact, it should come up with the result on the NSA search engine there. And you can just send me an email and tell me that it's for Sarah and that you'd like to hire her to set up your organic garden. And I highly recommend her services because she's really taken on a lot of work right now, mostly by word of mouth. So if you actually want to be able to be in there while she's still got the time to set up people's gardens for them, I suggest you contact me through the Vinnie Eastwood Show contact page there or on Facebook or wherever, and I'll hook you up with Sarah and get yourself some gardening done. Statistics New Zealand features figures show the average cost of capsicum in July last year was about $4.22 for an average size capsicum. That's $21.12 a kilo. Oh my God. Lee Catley of Hort NZ said, if it has been more difficult to grow them here in the last month or so, then that is going to show up in much higher prices. If it's too expensive for your budget, you shouldn't buy it, she says. There are plenty of other options that are in season that are really good value. Okay, now,
See, that seems like a negotiation for, like, you know, vegetable prices, right? Well, think about this. If you can't afford it, don't buy it. Doesn't that seem like just general economic advice? Maybe the government might be benefiting from some kind of a logical deduction of that magnitude, you know? Here's some other options for you. Picking peppers and other ones are actually relatively cheap prices around the country. And they're actually at farmers' markets. And this is the thing, man. We've really got to start performing much better and trying to support.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinny Eastwood Show. Podcasting live from our little Sicilian island chain nation of New Zealand, where we elect people who basically support the global banking mafia and destroy the nation for their very benefit so that they can have some nice holiday homes here, like on Waikiki Island or some Shiite Muslim that cost a couple of $1 million so that they can retire in a country where people don't really care. And also, incidentally, don't rush up to you and try and get your autograph because they actually have respect for people's privacy and things like that, and or are too cowardly to actually confront them with a camera because they've been that psychologically castrated by all of the socialist and mafioso policies up till this date.
Welcome back to the Vinny Eastwood Show. Thank you, Godfather.
You're welcome.
Now, getting on to it. This is the big story in New Zealand right now. Not that it frickin' matters. Hey, have you ever noticed? Have you actually ever noticed that the only stories that appear to be hyped up as if they matter, generally are the stories that just don't. I'm sorry, maybe that's funny to me. Maybe other people have lost their sense of humour about it, and you'd be forgiven for that. Key, Mr. Key, says the Labour leadership race will expose divisions. Now, for those of you who internationally who don't know, we got these Tweedledee and Tweedledum parties, much like you have, you know. And in our country, the Democrats, instead of being blue, are red. And instead of being called Democrats, they're called Labour. And the Republicans, instead of being red, are blue. And instead of, you know, being right-wingers, as they should do, they're just kind of left-wing. And then they accuse the other people of being too left-wing, essentially. See? You see what I'm saying here? It's a global agenda. It's a global agenda. They're manipulating everybody on both sides of the house into believing that there's actually some kind of difference on either side of the house. Am I the only one who sees this? I surely don't think I am. It's just, you know, hardcore socialism or other kinds of hardcore socialism. I mean, they're just a bunch of Trotskyites, you know? Trotskyite Muslim? Hmm? Prime Minister John Key says he does not care who takes over the Labour leadership and the race would reveal deep divisions in the party. You know, personally, I don't really care who takes over their leadership either. I mean, look at you, who you got to choose from. Shane Jones, Grant Robertson, and David Cunliffe. Ever heard of those guys? Nobody has. You know why? Because nobody cares. least of all, the opposition leader, who should know all these people, doesn't even care, you know? His comments come after Labour MP David Cunliffe, who's incidentally the MP for my local area in New Lynn and have talked to a number of times, by all accounts, appears to be a nice guy, which means he's probably a psychopath that wants to take over the country and behest the New World Order, as all nice guys who smile and wave and then just walk away without actually revealing anything deep about their personality and don't have any long-lasting relationships tend to be. So he's bound to be in for a shot for the leadership role. Confirmed he would go up against Grant Robertson and Shane Jones in the leadership contest. Now, I don't mean to call David Cunliffe a psychopath. I honestly don't know. But at the end of the day, it doesn't matter who you are, what your personality is. Once you're in the politics barrel, okay, it doesn't matter whether you're not a good apple or a bad apple. It's a bad barrel. It's a bad barrel. If you're a good apple, you ain't going to be able to accomplish Shiite Muslim. If you're a bad apple, on the other hand, oh boy, that bad barrel is going to get right behind you and support every single policy that you got coming out of your lying, bankster-supported, UN socialism-loving mouth. In it! The Labour Party has confirmed Grant Robertson, David Cunliffe and Shane Jones were the only three nominations for party leader received by yesterday's 10 p.m. deadline. Ballots will be distributed to three sectors of the Electoral College, party members, caucus and affiliates on Thursday and Friday this week. Hustling meetings being on hustling. What the heck is hustling? Is that a cross between hosting and being a hussy? Mate, hey, in fact, that sounds like a Labour Party meeting to me. Hosting hussies. I think I just created a new word. Begin on Saturday with a series of 12 meetings held over 11 days. Mr. Key told TV3's First Line today that he did not mind who was leader, saying they all had strengths and weaknesses. He said Mr. Jones would not make it, and the race would be between Mr. Robertson and Mr. Cunliffe. I don't know why Shane Jones wouldn't make it. He's, I don't know nothing about him. You know, here's the thing that I find funny. Is people are actually stupid enough to believe that Labour can win the next election, as if it matters anyway. Nobody knows who their party leaders are. They keep shuffling them round like they're a deck of cards that only contain jokers. Okay? It's ridiculous. National Party went through this exact same crisis years and years ago until, you know, oh, a Federal Reserve banker, he'll lead us to victory in 2008 financial crisis, which he helped cause. Awesome. Okay, look, here's the reason why Labour's not going to win. Because the people that are at the head of the party aren't currently responsible for the massive crisis that the country's in right now. It's only once they're actually the ones responsible for all the problems and everything like that and will only make them worse that they wind up getting elected. Okay? I can't make it any clear-cut than that. Are we in a real fact situation in this country right now? Yeah. Who caused it? John Key and the New World Order. So, John Key and the New World Order is going to get re-elected then? Oh, yeah. Okay. Fair enough. Sounds pretty logical, doesn't it? He said Mr. Jones would not make it, and the race would be between Mr. Robertson and Mr. Cunliffe, and quote, both of these gentlemen are going to take the Labour Party even further to the left. It's going to be quite a far-left opposition between the Greens, who are a long way left, and Labour, who are tracking left. You know, they're tracking left. Oh. As if implementing global socialism through the TPPA, selling off the state assets and things like that to oligarchs, and spying on everybody with your own little GCSB Stasi, which, you know, they probably listen to the stuff right now just going, oh, that Vinnie Eastwood, if he ever got popular, we'd actually have to do something about it. I won't ever really get popular, not really, because, hey, I'm speaking the truth. People don't like the frickin' truth. They prefer to be frickin' lied to. Don't they? Don't you, New Zealand? Don't you, America? You love being lied to. You love following people who just, you know, hype things out of proportion, make things up off the top of their head, steal people's ideas, claim that they're their own, and then vote for somebody who says that he's going to save you when he, in fact, caused the problems. Don't you? You love that stuff. Can't get enough of it. I mean, we've got to have like a big pig trough or something for the rest of you to feed out of so that there's no actual possibility that you'll ever gain any nutrition from your intellectual exploits or any kind of a political debate or ramification. You know, that's what this country's been turned into. That's what the whole world's been turned into. Very slowly but surely, with the aid of government propaganda and corporate propaganda, and goodness knows, I mean, have you even had a propaganda with anybody recently, or has it all just been improper BS that you've been talking about, you know, nothing that truly matters, and or even if you are talking about something that matters, you don't actually really do anything about it, and you feel like talking about it is enough. It's not enough. You're not doing enough. You know how I know you're not doing enough? Because not enough being freaking done. it's not like, oh, he's doing it already, so I'll do it. Okay, just one voice of resistance is not enough. Okay, you need millions, thousands upon thousands upon thousands of people, you know, cracking up in radio shows and doing videos and exposing scumbaggery and attending big public meetings and conferences and things of that nature before you've even got some kind of momentum where people think there's even popular to resist. That's what I think is a real problem here, is that resistance is not a popular ideal. Okay, it's not something that people actually really vibe with. And I'm talking about real resistance, not choosing left wing over right wing, but choosing right over wrong. The morality of this country has been steadily undermined over the years. No form of freedom will exist in the future. Any kind of so-called constitutional or citizens' rights that we think that we had or ever had will be gone. They will be a memory. Because people think that it's up to somebody else to save them. You know, Jesus will return and save me. He'll rapture me off. You know, he ain't going to rapture you, okay? Read your freaking Bible. It says you'll be raptured after the tribulation, all right? It means you're going to have to suffer and die and be persecuted and have to go underground for like 7 years, if you're lucky, once the new world order comes in the old mark of the beast. I mean, that's what the Bible says. And I'm not saying that I fully believe in everything in the Bible. I haven't even properly read it. Spoken to a number of people who have probably read it, and that's what they're telling me, and they've shown me the passages and what have you. So anybody else who doesn't believe in claims that they believe in the Bible and hadn't actually freaking read the lines and the passages which they think that they're living by, come on, it's a book. Pick it up, read it, instead of preaching BS which some preacher told you. The only reason why there's preachers out there is because just like back in the day when they didn't teach anybody how to read frickin' Latin, they use it to control people by interpreting it for them. That's the thing that's going on here. And it's not, and it's no different because now we've got priests in politics, don't we? We have the high priest of the Labour Party and the high priest of the National Party, and they're both misinterpreting whatever words or any other inspiration that anybody's got so that they can manipulate you into giving up your money, giving up your freedom, giving up your kids, and giving up your country. That's what's going on here. So John Key's right. It doesn't matter which person winds up leading the National Party, the Labour Party, because the Labour Party ain't going to win the next election anyway, certainly not by itself at any rate. It'll have to negotiate and form many coalitions with other far-left agenda parties like the Greens and so on and so forth in order to get in. And if they don't get in, it's like, oh no, we don't have a hardcore far left kind of New World Order loving trade deal supporting, just turn up to protest just to garner the support of all those people that are wanting to resist the current government agenda so that we can steal their votes and then manipulate them and lie to them and completely betray them once we've actually been given power. But we won't do that before we've been given power. I mean, how can we betray people if we've got no power? So let's just do what everybody wants us to do until such a time as they've been stupid enough to vote for us and believe the things that we're saying. And then when we get elected, we'll just frack all of you. You know, frack all of you. It is not illegal under New Zealand parliamentary law to lie, okay? You can openly deceive people about what your policies are. That's legal in this country. There ain't no code of conduct. There ain't no nothing. You can do whatever you want and just BS people until there's nothing left but lies. Nothing left but lies. It's the only thing that that this country is really starting to head towards. It's just this nest of seething, writhing, rapping vipers that just suck the lifeblood out of everything that connotes freedom, any creativity, any entrepreneurship, any private business or anything like that, wrapped up with so much red tape that they can't even breathe and they suffocate and die. That's what's happening to this country. In every single way you look. We're always talking about some new kind of tax that they're gonna put out, some new kind of rule that you have to follow. When was the last time anybody got given any frickin' rights out of this country and didn't have something stolen off them? Were you actually given something that wasn't taken from somebody else? You know, it's ridiculous. In fact, the only thing that I've seen where somebody's been given more rights as opposed to being them taken away is gay rights. Isn't that interesting? The only people that get any more rights to things that they perhaps didn't have a right to in the first place are people who are homosexual. Everything else has been taken off people. Don't you find that weird? And not to mention, gay people have to pay taxes too, so they're having their freedoms and everything and their free speech and everything taken off them as well. But, you know, you can marry somebody and then get divorced from them and they can take half your money, so that's all good. You know? spoken to a number of gay guys about this, and they're just like, what the hell's the point? You know? They don't get it. Even the gays weren't even supporting this legislation to a large degree. Isn't it? Isn't that strange? Isn't that strange? You give rights to people who don't even want them, and you take rights from everybody who's fought and died for them. That's classic. That smacks to me of absolute insanity. Okay? This whole country's just going down. It's like in the toilet right now. Honestly. You need to do something about it. Okay? It's not like I'm against anybody having rights. I'm just saying, hey, everybody's having their rights taken off them. It's not that kind of negotiation that's going on here where you give something, I give something, we both walk away better off. It's the government takes something and then takes something again and then says that you got something and then takes that something off you and then you go, okay, well, great, that was a good negotiation. It's BS, man. Total BS. Anyway, back on the Prime Minister. Quote, so in a way, you know, I don't really care because I think people will vote on the policies and in the end it will be a centre-right government of 6 years of proven quality versus a kind of far-left opposition. 6 years of proven quality? What, with 1,000 and million lies that you've told to everybody that you've been proven were frickin' lies? And Keith said the race was between three camps who, quote, all hate each other. Quote, so all we're going to see... It's 3 weeks of how deep the divisions are. Then at the end of it, there'll be this magnanimous speech of how unified they all are, and actually they'll retrench into their corners and all hate each other again. Yep, I think this is about the first truth that John Key's actually ever spoken. You know, ever! His entire political career! Mr. Cutler told by the Independent this morning he was humbled by the level of support he had, but the race would be really competitive. And it's a good thing for the party. And I've always got two really able colleagues that I'm able racing with and are going to be working together with the race. But, of course, the big picture is who can actually win the country. And the answer is the only people who can actually win the country is the frickin' New World Order. Last segment coming up. Please call in 218-339-8525 and we'll take your calls after the break. Back in a minute.
To fly to New Zealand by plane from New York City, it takes 22 hours. So from the Twin Cities, 19. I mean, I fly all the time, and 6 hours on a plane is like a lot, and 19 is wrong. And they distract you. They feed you, and then they feed you some more, and then they feed you, give me a dessert. I'll do a dessert, you prick. Give me that dessert. I'll have a Bloody Mary, yeah, give me a whiskey sour, yeah. Give me whatever you got. Just more liquor. And then when you're done, there's still 16 hours to go.
And we're back.
You want to know what's like?
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's our final segment now. Now the Labour leadership race, we've done off of that. Okay, we've got callers on the line. We need you to call in, ladies and gentlemen, 218-339-8525. Call in right now because we only have just a few minutes left of today's broadcast. We're going to go to our first caller, Ernie in California. Ernie, how's it going?
Hey, all right, Benny. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm somewhat fabulous.
Yeah, I hear that. Hey, I just want to shout out to people. We're over here in the United States, and we're watching this false war going to happen. You have BBC putting on pictures from Iraq in 1983 of people being gassed. And I just pulled up a picture of Mr. John Kerry hanging out with, what is his name, Anton LaVey, the head of the Satanic Church.
The Temple of Set.
So I just want to let you know, it's a really messed up world. We're out here in California getting Fukushima. Your country's falling apart. We're falling apart. Love your show, and I just want you to get some more calls in. Take care, brother.
All right. Thanks, Ernie, for that vote of confidence, man. Your country's fracked. My country's fracked. And we're all in this together. That's very nice. Okay. Our next caller now in a 575 area code caller. You're on the air. Yo, caller, you're on the air. Speak up, buddy. 575 area code. You know what I'm saying? We can hear you. Not wanting to talk? Okay, that's nice. Great. Speaking of articles. See, this is why I don't like taking callers a lot of the time, because, you know, you take one caller and then nobody calls out and you're just kind of left hanging. So we're just going to go to another article now. We've got this thingy here on U.S. Syria chemical weapon attack obscene. Now, I don't know about you guys here, right, but what really strikes me as very interesting about the U.S. criticizing people for using chemical weapons is that they're the ones who make half of them. Well, virtually all of them. You know what I'm saying? It's frickin' retarded. In fact, here's a better idea. We got a much better idea. Here we are. John Kerry with his chemical weapon dialogue. We'll see if I can play this video up here and get the audio coming out of the thing. Mate, we got Chris in Florida calling in now. Chris, you're on the air.
Hey, Chris. Ben, how you doing?
I'm good. How's it going with you, bro?
Good. Just enjoying the show. I also enjoyed the interview you did with Ed Offerman the other day. Really, really good.
Oh, yeah. That was awesome.
Yeah, hope you have him back on sometime.
Yeah, I most probably will do. I'm going to do like a big roundtable discussion. I was thinking that's like the coolest
cool.
thing.
That'd
yeah,
cool.
is when you get multiple big heads in a room together and they're all having a roundtable discussion like they're a bunch of friends around a table. It sounds great.
Yeah, like Camelot or something. We'll revive that tradition.
Did you say Kandahar? Isn't that a place where like lots of suicide bombs go off right now?
I want to bring this one thing up before I forget it. I saw this a few days ago, and I don't know if anybody's covered it or not, but the New York Slimes is beating the drum about global climate change or whatever they're calling it these days.
Yeah.
And supposedly there was some sort of a new consensus reached that said that, I heard it on CNN, and it said that it was 99% sure that humans were responsible. And in this article, I just checked it on the web. It says it's at least 95% sure that humans are the cause. And I just wanted to put
okay,
that out.
Okay, now, in science, is there such a thing as 99% sure? Or is it either 100 or you're just not sure?
Exactly.
These people aren't scientists, bro. Okay. But science has been turned into a new religion. Incidentally, the people who created science, you know, like Newton and all of these people who created all of these really wonderful tools and things of that nature in order to measure the physical world, were all deeply religious men who had respect for the spiritual realm and didn't want science to replace it, and instead said that if you're going to use science, use it to measure the physical world, and then be fully in touch with your spiritual side, not to erase and destroy it. And that's unfortunately what's going on with this climate change mob, isn't it, Chris? They're just a bunch of
exactly.
Gaia-worshipping cultists. I call them climate cultists, because that's precisely what they are. They have an absolute veneration for this climate change mantra. They have no respect whatsoever for humans, just in general, and they want everything to be controlled under quote unquote science. I mean, so if you replace the word science with the Vatican, for example, the Vatican has proven that climate change is real.
Uh huh.
The Vatican has now calls for a world government to address climate change issues that the Vatican has found out about. It starts to think a little bit differently now when you realize that it's not a science. It's actually a religion that's pushing all of this. Isn't it, Chris?
Right. Can I make one quick point about science and religion? First of all, the two, you know, like they try to make them like mutually exclusive. And also, science is basically it's for measuring things, you know. Yeah. But there are things that can't be measured or quantified, and things like freedom, things like love, things like consciousness, science can't, you know, delve into. Science is a yardstick, you know, if you will, and that's what it's used for. But there's been a concerted effort to actually turn it into a religion, and you see that, you know, manifest in all of its ugliness and, you know, transhumanism and that whole agenda, and, you know, how you have these debates where people, you know, you have the atheists on one side claiming that they're, you know, the pinnacles of reason, and the religious people on the other side claiming, you know, that they're the superstitious lot, and, you know, they pit the two against each other when, you know, I don't see the two as being mutually exclusive, and I just wanted to put that out there.
Well, do you know that there is now an atheist church opened up in London?
I didn't know that.
A church of anti-religion. That should tell you everything you need to know about the agenda of atheism. It's essentially an offshoot of Satanism that's been created by the elite in order to get people to stop believing in God, stop believing in higher powers of spirituality, and start believing in man as God in a transhumanist-type fashion, essentially. And if you believe in atheism, you're just buying into the agenda, you know?
Right.
You're not God. None of us are. What's your perspective on this, Chris? I mean, like, being in the United States is a very, very religiously dominated country, but the irony is 99% of the people that claim that they're part of a religion don't actually even follow the religion, and the other bunch of people who don't follow any religion at all, unwittingly, are following a religion.
Yeah. It's exactly like that. And you know what's funny is that people's religion, you know, whether they come down on one side or the other, it's funny how they like to express it with their bumper stickers.
Yeah.
For some reason, I always see what people believe with their bumper stickers. They've got bumper stickers with fish, or they've got bumper stickers with fish with feet, or they've got bumper stickers that say, you know, something positive about God or something else. It's funny how they choose to express it, or the depth of their philosophical, you know, beliefs are as deep as, you know, a one-line slogan that they stuck to the back of their car at some point.
Well, they go around to this slave job and stuck in traffic in Agenda 21 city, buying gas from a New World Order-controlled oil company, driven in a car created by a New World Order-controlled auto manufacturer with parts that are made to run out, in accordance with planned obsolescence that they probably bought after watching an advertisement that told them that buying things makes them happy, but it's truly it. But I've got a bumper sticker that says something about God, ergo I can just, you know, forgive all the rest of that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, man, I get my phone out and I take pictures whenever I see them. You know, I see the funniest things. I'm so glad. That's the one thing about the cameras on the phones, is, you know, I used to try to tell people this stuff, and, you know, they wouldn't believe it. And now, you know, I can just take out the phone, and I got the proof right there. So, you know, yay for technology.
Here's an ironic story for you. My sister, who is an atheist, got cut off in traffic twice the other day, and both of the people that cut her off had a fish on the back of their bumper sticker that says, "Jesus loves you and is in a hurry." I mean, come on. You know, I'm going to do the Christian thing and just cut this lady off in traffic. You know? People don't even know what their belief really is anymore. You know, that's what I feel really quite sad about. It's like, convictions take courage, okay, in order to fulfill them. And Chris, I want to thank you for your call. And what I find very interesting is people don't actually care enough anymore. They don't have the courage of their convictions to do what they think is right, to follow what they claim that they believe in, and to do the things that the things that inspire them actually tell them to do. I mean, you know, have a look at the example of Jesus, whether or not you believe he really existed or not, is irrelevant. You think about the symbol of Jesus, guy who throws the bankers out of the temple, the guy who the only time he ever went to church was to mess up the place, okay? The guy who said that everybody has their own innate power inside themselves, the truth and the light and the way, and so on and so forth, that you don't need authority figures, and then we kill him and use him to prop up a church. We'll be right back. We'll see you again sometime.